You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the 20th edition of the Center Steer Podcast. My name is John Kostic, your host here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Summer has finally arrived. It is warm, it is hot, and occasionally muggy. The rain has ended. Monsoon season ran for almost all the last month and finally have dried out. So
don't jinx it by talking about it.
We need rain. Rain is good. Rain creates green and drinkable water.
We need it to dry out once in a while, too.
We do. We do. Absolutely. Yes. Sitting across from me is...
I'm Harold.
And also via Skype is...
Hey, I'm Morgan from Vermont. How's it going?
And our guest this month is all the way from Central Mexico. That is the country of Mexico.
Old Mexico, not New Mexico.
By the name of Sean Regan.
Hi, guys. Yes, this is Sean Regan from San Miguel de Allende.
Nice accent
there. Say
that
like a local.
Yeah, that's kick-ass. We'll talk to Sean later in the podcast, but first, the news. And first up to talk about, I would like to remind everybody and mention that we are part of the 4x4 Radio Network, which includes XJ Podcast, which has renamed itself to The Jeep Podcast, and the Muddy Microphone Podcast, which is all about ATVs, and the 4x4 Podcast with Dan Cole, which is all about all things 4x4. Dan's been on the show, and I would recommend that you go out and listen to episode 103 of his podcast. He talks about taking his family, relocating from Kansas City, I think, all the way up to Alaska. So he took that trip. So this was a first kind of hot wash of that trip and what he went through and the things he experienced, and it was a good one. You should check it out. Episode 103 of the 4x4 Podcast, which is on the 4x4 Radio Network. I have trouble keeping that straight.
I was following his Facebook feed of the not only the trip but the preparations for it, and he actually built a trailer for that expedition.
And first up in official news, and we're going to start with two stories that are not Land Rover related, but they are in the indirectly Land Rover. First is a Jeep was electronically, wirelessly, over the cellular network, hacked in St. Louis from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, of all places. And they controlled the vehicle. They stopped the vehicle. They disabled the vehicle. They moved it around. They changed the radio station. They put on the washers and the wipers so the driver couldn't see anything. And of course, not that the driver could do anything at that point. And so this is as a result, Fiat Chrysler, which owns Jeep, has issued a recall of 14.4 million cars because they have that Uconnect system, which is their infotainment system, and that's what allowed the
they hacked in through the entertainment system.
They did because basically the car has an IP address. They found the IP address and they pounded on it and they were able to gain access.
Found
to
a
it.
Way to cross over into the other systems on the car. Were they able to shut the engine off?
I didn't hear that. I think so.
Okay.
I did. I know they were able to stop the vehicle. They could steer. Steering.
That's scary.
But I think they could only steer it backwards. They said they had problems trying to steer it forwards. But they were only able to get it to steer in reverse. But they figured eventually they would be able to.
Still more than they should be doing.
It's a hell of a lot more.
That's a scary thing.
I would assume a lot of the steering stuff is related to like automatic parallel parking options and stuff like that.
That's why it
would
work
the reverse.
Yeah.
I've actually seen some previous research that they have done in this area where they basically hacked in via the FM radio. So this is sort of the first where they've gone directly over the internet to get into these vehicles. And in previous ones, they've even been able to, you know, deploy the airbag at low speeds and all sorts of stuff. So,
well, I think
kind of scary.
Some of those past vulnerabilities have been fixed. I think this is more of a general, you know, vulnerability of the entire system versus like those individual systems. But they've been tying more and more together too with these infotainment systems and just the general vehicle control.
Yeah, the fact that those two can be tied together, and if you breach into the entertainment, you have access to everything. That's pretty scary.
Yep, and I don't have the article in front of me, but I know almost pretty quickly Congress said we need to have a rule of laws and controls about this, which, but manufacturers should also be doing this on their own.
Certainly need to have some discussion about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be, you know, taking security into heavy consideration when building these.
How long have you been in IT?
A long time. At my current position, I've been there like 12 years. So.
And how many times has security been considered from the get-go? Exactly. How many times have we learned from past mistakes? Exactly. Yeah, I'm sorry. Also being in IT and in security, these things, like, you saw it coming.
We didn't used to think that securing our air travel system was all that important either.
Exactly.
Until there was a problem.
Right. And but this one, you could have anticipated that if you have you put the car and give it an IP address and you put it on the internet and you have those systems even remotely connected,
right.
someone's going to find a way. You know it's going to happen. So you could have taken better measures ahead of time.
Yeah.
Moving on, FCA and Tata will build a new Jeep vehicle in India from 2017. And FCA is Jeep. That's the Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. They're going to have a joint venture. They already do have a joint venture with Tata, but this specific one is with Tata to build a Jeep in India beginning in 2017.
So Land Rover and Jeep will be cousins.
At least in India. Yes. This will be the fourth plant to build Jeeps outside of the United States. Which I didn't know that. Jeep models are currently built in India, Brazil, and will begin production in China in the fourth quarter of this
year.
They're
also making them in Italy, too, aren't they?
Yes.
At a Fiat plant?
Did I say that?
You said India.
Oh, I'm sorry, Italy. I apologize. Yeah, Italy, Brazil, and China, and now India.
And India, yeah.
So those three. So that is the non-Land Rover news. Moving into Land Rover news specifically, Bloomberg View had an article which I really liked that is entitled RIP Land Rover's Defender, the Greatest Car Ever. And it's all the things we've ever talked about Defenders about. It's
hard to go wrong with a title like that.
Exactly. This is the perfect article to show your friends who don't understand why you have the disease, why you love your Defender or your Land Rover in general, specifically Defender in this case, and why you cling to it more than anything else in the world, which I think Sean can attest to. So this is a great article. Of course, I'll have a link to it in the show notes if you want to show your friends.
Because this is so much easier than taking them on a trip and just resolving all doubt.
True. Right, Sean?
Yes. Although in the article, aren't they talking about the newer version of the Defender that looks kind of like the Land Cruiser?
He is talking about an updated one because I know the writer was from Austria or Germany. I think he was talking about the current model, but the underpinnings are still there from going back, you know, all the way. Yeah. But not the brandy new one that we have not seen.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not the upcoming one.
It's a reference to the one they're making now, but will be soon not making.
I see. Excellent.
Hence the rest in peace, the RIP.
And speaking of the soon to not be making, Land Rover, it was reported that Land Rover was extending current Defender production beyond January of 16 into February or possibly even into April. But then the next day, another story came out saying that Land Rover has dismissed speculation about continuing Defender production. So I guess the Birmingham Post had an anonymous source inside, probably a worker on a Defender line. They're working two Defender lines now, I believe, and production is up. I think they made... I believe they made 14,000 cars in 2014, and they're already at 17,000 now, and that's
right.
Halfway through the
year.
And
they've stopped taking orders already.
Correct. So I guess a worker said that they were going to extend production to meet the demand, but then, as I said, the next day Land Rover came out, and this is their quote, "Defender production in Sully Hall is now entering its final phase. We have not confirmed an end date for UK production. However, we do not expect this to continue past the end of January 2016. So take all that for what you will.
And wait for any news stories that might update that.
Yes, and listen to this podcast. On a monthly basis, we'll keep you up to date.
We'll do our best.
Also, on Land Rover JLR News, they are partnering with Magna Steyr. Did I say that correctly?
I believe you did.
An Austrian company best known for producing other vehicles like the G-Wagon and the Pinsgauer. And so apparently there's some speculation that maybe Defender Production would be taken up by these folks, whether that's the new one or the old one. It's not clear. All that we know is that there's a relationship now between Land Rover and Magna Steyr.
Well, the Pinscower is a badass truck along the lines of the FC-101, so I think cloning that or mixing that together with a Defender body would be something really incredible.
Yeah, I don't think we would get any complaints for something like that.
Not from me.
That would be awesome.
And don't forget, you'll have to wait 25 years to drive it, unless you go to Europe.
That might be worth the price of a ticket.
One can move.
Yeah. That'd be worth the price of a ticket just to go over and take a test drive.
Yeah, probably would be. Yeah, yeah. Moving around the world to China, we had reported this before, but we had some new information on it. The Landwin, which is their version of the Evoque, is coming to production and is going to be in the hands of Chinese consumers, I believe, this month or next month, so it might be August or September. And so it's coming out. It's going to have a a 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine. Output will be 188 horsepower, which is less than the 237 horsepower for the current Evoque. So that's
a lot less.
Yes.
I suspect that's probably not the only shortcoming.
I believe the cost is also significantly less, and I think that's reflected in the horsepower. They do not have a price here, so I can't report that to you.
It's a cheap Chinese knockoff, in my opinion.
That would be the Landwin. That's what it sounds like.
Yep.
Rolling back to the United States of America, the 2015 Disco Sport has been reviewed by Autoblog, one of the first reviews I have seen of it, and they generally liked the vehicle. Thought it was good fit and finish, well put together. They're really the only quibble about it was that the transmission likes to hunt through all its gears. Nice little reading here that the transmission hunts through gears at low speeds as if it's determined to use all of its gears just because it has them.
It can, so it does.
Kind of sounds like a Land Rover too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And it is a 9-speed transmission. So that's coming. Also, Harold and I went to the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix last weekend, and I took my Series 3 109. Harold had a Defender, and we enjoyed the show. It was a lot of fun to see. We got there, 10:30. We didn't move from the spot for 2 hours to go. We couldn't go look at it. We couldn't leave. Everybody just, as soon as the...
We got swarmed.
People just came out of the woodwork and were there. Unlike now, last year when we went, it had been raining so much that we had to wait 2 hours to get onto the field, and there was a third of the normal people there. This year was nice, warm, and hot, and people just swarmed us, and we did. I don't think we moved till about 1 o'clock, and I'm like, Harold, we got to go. Let's go look at these other vehicles, and so we walked around. And in walking around, we came upon the local dealership tent. They had all the line up there for Jag and Land Rover, and they had a Disco Sport, and it was open. We got to sit in it and look around, and we even popped the hood and looked under the hood and opened the rear tailgate. And
looked at the electric seat back releases.
Oh, that's right. Those are pretty cool. Yeah. Instead of
actually reaching the extra foot and pulling a manual release, you had a little button there to push.
And then the seat would fling, pop forward. Yeah. So it was electric release from the open the tailgate, and there's two buttons on the inside. You'd push those, and depending on which one you wanted, the seat would then pop forward. So yeah, as Harold said, instead of opening the back door, the side door, reaching in with your hand. Yeah, it was kind of cool.
It was fairly convenient.
It was a convenience thing.
It also had a power tailgate, as I recall, too.
Yes, that's pretty much standard anymore.
Yeah, that's becoming the norm.
The norm, yeah. The panel roof was pretty cool. It looked like a fixed panel roof on the inside.
It was fixed, but the view was phenomenal.
Yes, it was. The inside of a tent, in our case. My general view of it was great fit and finish, good-looking vehicle, but it wasn't distinctive. It was not. It looks like every other modern vehicle out there.
Well, it's losing some of its roverness, if you will.
Yes, I completely agree.
And the price is, it's a lot of truck, but it may be worth it to some people, but it seemed pretty expensive to me.
Was that one $53,000?
$55,000.
Yeah, that seemed to be,
For a light-duty Disco, if you will.
Yeah.
Being a Disco Sport, it's a glorified Freelander.
Right, exactly. Nothing wrong with a Freelander.
And how did it compare in size to, a Freelander? Physically larger or
bigger,
same size?
Bigger than a Freelander, smaller than a New Disco.
Yep.
It was not significantly bigger, I think, than a Freelander, but it was significantly smaller than a Disco.
I think it was significantly bigger than the original Freelander. Maybe not the LR2, the second Freelander.
But it definitely felt wider, and it definitely felt longer. And it's, I think, all some of the modern Land Rovers have this bulbous front end feel to them, like they kind of flare out and have this rounded front. It has that to it.
But it has a sideways four-cylinder engine like a Freelander would.
Yeah, right. But so it was, a car. It was Land Rover.
It was okay, but it wasn't really worth getting excited about other than the fact that it was a chance to see one.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, mind you, if I was driving it, I might have different opinions, but just sitting there looking at it, I'm sort of middle of the road.
So if we were to take it to Iceland and try to ford a stream, that might change our opinions.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather take my 55 and buy a vintage Defender and fix it up.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
I think, that's definitely the sentiment of, I think, the folks who would listen to this podcast would think the same thing. So.
And as a previous, first-gen Freelander owner, how does it compare to something like that? Obviously, that was a more low-end vehicle.
My one complaint with the Freelander that I had, and I was not a big Land Rover person at the time. You had this expectation here in North America that Land Rover is kind of high end luxury, and the Freelander didn't have any of that. So I was like, I expected more luxury out of it. But I did like the vehicle. I loved it. I still think about it. It's a nice, it was an enjoyable vehicle. This, the Disco Sport, however, has that luxury feel to it. Stitching, and this was, I think, the HSE model, so I think that we saw, so it's possible maybe some of the other models.
I think you could get it cheaper if you didn't have maybe all of the bells and whistles of the HSE.
Right. But to your point, Morgan, to answer your question, it did feel higher end and luxurious, I suppose.
Now, on the other end, if you wanted a cheaper one, what would you give up? Because all the things in it were pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. Moving on to other Land Rover new model news, a Land Rover dealership in Boise, Idaho, has done a video review of the 2016 Range Rover Diesel. So the nice thing about this is there is a diesel Range Rover in North America.
And they're driving it.
Yes.
It's being used.
And all the things you would think are in effect. Great low-end torque, excellent petrol gas mileage. I think the lady that did the review said it was 23, 28, and she at some point even got 31 on the highway at some point.
Actually, it'll get infinite mileage to the petrol.
That's true.
But fuel mileage, on the other hand.
Fuel mileage, thank you. And so she seemed to really enjoy it. Good for towing, of course, and all the things you would think that you would do with a diesel, but now in a Range Rover, and clean, and doesn't smell. And
she went to great lengths to explain the difference between torque and horsepower in the review.
Well, torque, as I recall, is initial power?
Well, torque is instantaneous. It's the ability to move the vehicle at any time, whereas horsepower is how much of that torque you can use over time. Hmm. So torque gets you moving, horsepower keeps you moving.
There we go.
So that's the short answer.
That's the short answer. It's a good answer.
Without the science.
Yeah, that's fine. Speaking of diesels, these are general articles about diesels that I thought were interesting since we lust after diesels here, especially in North America. Diesels easily trump gas for total cost of ownership. This is also on Autoblog. And kind of the general theme of this was that while a diesel may cost you $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, maybe even $7,000 more to purchase, and parts and repairs and even fuel can be more costly than its petrol equivalent, over time, in this case 3 to 5 years, total cost of ownership can actually, in fact, be less by owning a diesel.
And, in fact, the longer the time period, the better the deal is for diesel.
And that is because?
You've got an engine that's going to last at least twice as long. So you can put a lot of life into a diesel engine that you can't with a gasoline.
That's a good point.
And over time, they hold their resale value better.
That's definitely true, right?
So it's good in the short run, but it's also really good in the long run. And the fuel cost difference depends on really where you are, because it's priced differently in different states. In some places it's more, in some places it's less. But in general, right now, it seems to be sort of right in the same neighborhood with gasoline, like between regular and premium.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I've been paying $3.09 here in the Pittsburgh area for the last 6 months.
And given that your mileage is so much higher, the actual fuel cost per mile is still lower with the diesel.
And further, another article that the BBC had, this is a little more lengthy one, but kind of a negative on diesels was, is it time to switch to a cleaner fuel? And the point of this article, the theme, was that while, yes, diesels have gotten cleaner and they're better and such things, however, the NO2 levels, however, have not been brought down considerably. That's like the next thing to work on, if you will, is to help clean up the NO2, which is what, nitrous That's oxide?
Oxides of nitrogen.
Okay.
And that is actually very tricky to control with the diesel, because let me see how to explain this. It's dependent upon the exhaust gas temperature primarily, and diesels tend to have a lot more high-temperature exhaust gas. And so that it's hard to make a diesel not produce oxides of nitrogen. It's still a problem with gasoline engines, but generally speaking, that's taken care of in the catalytic converter.
Mm.
With the diesel, you have to employ some different strategies. It is manageable, but it's more difficult.
Is that the urea that helps with that?
The urea actually is part of the particulate mechanism. There's like an after filter that filters out the particulate matter, the soot, the little black particles that you see. Those collect over time, and then the urea is used to burn those out of the trap in what they call a regeneration cycle.
Okay.
Your Volkswagen, on the other hand, does not use urea. It has a different strategy. It actually uses diesel fuel. Injects a little bit of diesel fuel late in the cycle, and that overheats the particulate filter and burns the soot out that way.
Nice. So apparently some European cities, it has been reported by the WHO that NO2 levels are more than double WHO guidelines with diesel vehicles, the single greatest contributor. So I guess we might see diesels as another targeted for cleanup.
But they already are cleaning that up in most modern markets with the newer electronically controlled diesels. The problem is you have so many older diesels still in circulation, and I think they're the lion's share of the problem. And the new vehicles may produce a lot less, but it's going to take time for those to replace the older ones.
Especially since they last longer.
Long, yeah. You've got an engine that lasts 500,000 miles. It's going to take a while before you update enough.
Swap out the whole fleet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right. Yeah, good point. I hadn't thought about that. Is there other ways to retrofit those, or is that, again, it's an expense?
It's an expense, and it's a little tricky with the older systems to make the necessary changes. And I don't think you're going to have any incentive for people to do it.
Probably not.
Are you guys familiar with the 2.2-liter diesel Defenders they have down here?
That would be the TDCI?
2.2-liter, they call it the Puma?
The Puma engine, yeah.
It seems pretty efficient and powerful, no?
It's a good engine. We can't get them here, so I can't tell you much about them.
Cool. I heard that it gets 28 miles per gallon and has the same amount of horsepower as my 3.9-liter V8 and a little more torque, and it's a four-cylinder.
Well, mind you, your 3.9 is not known for its high power output, so...
That's true.
Are you considering switching?
Oh, my gosh, I don't have $79,000. For overlanding, I would love the efficiency, sure.
I bet there's a back alley shop somewhere in Mexico that could do it a lot cheaper than $79,000.
Right.
And I did get a chance to ride in one of the 2012 Puma Defender 110s last summer, going down to the Vermont Roverland Expo or whatever it was.
Is that one of the demonstration units that Rovers North had?
That was, yeah. And it was definitely powerful. And we definitely flew down the highway, and it did not guzzle fuel like we would have expected.
Yeah, they get the cool toys up there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how was the ride on that one, Morgan?
It was quite comfortable. Obviously, the interior is significantly modernized, but, space-wise, it's not that big a change, so it doesn't feel that different. Obviously, much smoother ride, though.
Probably difficult to really accurately assess the comfort of the ride when you're too busy drooling.
Exactly. Although I will say the doors did not leak. The floor definitely pooled with drool. So
what? That's not a Land Rover. Come on. If it's raining and it's not raining inside, come on.
That was actually a very rainy weekend, so I was very happy
to be dry.
To experience working door seals.
Yeah, for 6 weeks or so.
Yep.
And I'm sure they've upgraded the suspension on that thing, too.
I can't recall, but it was fairly nice.
I don't think it's significantly different.
No? Okay.
But you haven't had a lot of seat time in a coil-sprung Rover yet, either.
I have not. At least not 1987, anyway. So I had a 2001 coil-sprung, but yeah.
Yeah, different.
Yeah, it was.
And I have an update in the ongoing saga of the federally seized Land Rovers. I think last time we discussed that the case had been dismissed and those Rovers had been returned. But if you remember, when we first broke the story, we discussed, in fact, I think we talked about it a couple of years ago in our podcast, but about 2.5 years ago, there was a raid of the shop of Dr. Aaron Richardet, the importer that was involved in this case, and the federal government seized all kinds of trucks and all kinds of parts and of course, his records, which they used to find the trucks that they seized last year. Since Will Hedrick, defender of defenders, was so successful at getting the 40 seized trucks dismissed and returned, he then turned his attention to the original raid of March, I think it was, early 2013, and he was able to get those trucks that were seized returned to their rightful owners, because many of those trucks were actually private individuals who had them there to be worked on by Dr. Aaron and his crew.
They hadn't imported them through him.
Well, whether they had or not, that was not the issue, but the government had come in and just taken them without warrant, without process. They'd just taken them as part of the raid of his shop. And in fact, that was a difficult thing to chase down because there hadn't been a warrant. There was no official paper trail on these things. But Will, being the tenacious badass lawyer that he is,
defender of defenders
indeed, he got those trucks returned.
Nice. Excellent. Well done.
Yes. And the other update I have in that story is that just yesterday there was a little gathering down in North Carolina for many of the seized trucks, the ones from the warrant that were returned, because many of those were from the North Carolina area. They put together a little gathering, a little picnic. Invited Will to come out. They had a little party. They had a defender-shaped cake there. And at the climax of the event, they presented the guest of honor, Will Hedrick, defender of defenders, with his very own defender. They got together and they bought him
Wow.
a defender.
Nice. Wow.
Excellent.
I don't have many details on what it is. I believe it's a 110, but that is so cool.
Nice. Well, well done. Good job. That's really nice.
And I'll
Very
put this out
deserved.
There. If that truck needs anything I can provide, you guys let me know. I will do it.
After mine's done, right?
Well, we don't have to know where the parts are coming from.
Oh, wait a minute. Not mine. yes, it certainly is well deserved. And I remind everybody that there's a Kickstarter, or no, GoFundMe.
There's a GoFundMe.
For Will to help with his expenses in this endeavor, since he did quit his full-time gig to help get these vehicles back.
Yeah, and now that the defender of defenders is now an owner of a defender, he's going to need that money to keep his truck on the road.
That's true. Yes, yes. And he was a Land Rover enthusiast prior to this, right?
He actually had owned a truck at some point, maybe even a couple of them, but as I understood it, he did not currently own one, so that problem has been fixed.
Good, good. Excellent. Good news.
I thought so.
That's excellent news. That's great news. And it's also the news. And we're back to the podcast. This is number 28 of the Center Steer podcast. I will now turn it over to Morgan for our Heritage segment.
And I will have to actually defer on the heritage segment. Unfortunately, the holiday continues. Last month, I was actually on holiday. This month, it's just been a little too crazy. So we will have to catch that up next month.
Well, let me ask you this. Since you mentioned you were on holiday last month, did you make any progress on your heritage Land Rover?
Sadly, I did not. I needed a long break from as many work projects as possible. So that unfortunately was included.
And your Rover is another work project to you?
Not exactly. But it does, require a bit of extra travel and, bloody knuckles and stuff like that. So,
okay. Well,
I needed to decompress.
It would be more work for me, so I can relate to that.
Yeah. It's not like he can walk downstairs into his garage and, or drive a half a mile and, he's at the garage.
I think the best part of that would be the drive across Vermont just to get to the project.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely enjoy the drive. And honestly, I really like that I moved it 150 miles away, because then I go and that's all I do when I go is work on it.
And how was the Volvo? Didn't you have a problem with the Volvo?
Yeah, I had some major electrical issues the last couple of weeks. Turned out to be an intermittent battery. And it's nice to have a warranty on those things, but not when they won't replace it because it seems like it's fine at the time.
So until it really fails and strands you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, did you finally get that sorted out?
Yeah, I, replaced a lot of wiring and then finally got the battery to really fully fail and got it swapped out, and now it's fine.
You know, if you take a crescent wrench and you set it on those two metal posts on top of the battery is going to fail pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, and it welds the crescent wrench to the top, so it's really poor evidence against me.
It's a handle.
Yeah.
It's a lifting handle, yeah.
All right, no worries, Morgan. I understand you were busy and things are going on, and this is all volunteer, so it is what it is, right?
Yes, it is.
You get what you pay for.
It's not like the information is going to expire.
That's true.
They're old trucks, after all. Yeah. They'll only get older and better.
Yes, it's like fermentation process.
There you go. The information is fermenting one more month.
All right, then we will move to talk with our special guest, Sean Regan. He's a photographer, I think, by trade now, and he's living in central Mexico. And we heard about Sean from the Petrolicious video that was done, I think, about 2 months ago called La Poderosa. I'm probably saying that incorrectly. And Jeff Aronson, our friend of the show from Rovers Magazine, put us in contact with Sean, and now Sean's on the show. Say hi, Sean.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
No worries. So, La Poderosa, what does it mean, and how did that happen?
Okay. Well, La Poderosa means the powerful one, and we didn't name it, but we used to keep her in a garage in town, and it was connected to a hotel where there were valets, and the valets would see her come in and leave, and we learned months into it that they had given her a name, La Poderosa, which I believe is also the name of Che Guevara's motorcycle.
That's a cool story. You have to say that's really cool.
Right. We hadn't named the vehicle until then. It just had to happen, and it did.
Do you actually call your defender La Poderosa then, as you hey, let's go take the Poderosa out?
Absolutely, I do. When I'm talking with Mitty, we do. And when we write about it in articles, we do. Sure.
That's cool. I find it fascinating. Those are cool things. So what is the Poderosa? What exactly is it?
It's a 1995 North American spec Land Rover Defender 90.
And how did you acquire it? Or where did you find it?
I found it secondhand when I was living in the States. I believe it was actually in New York, and I was in Massachusetts, but I got word of it. I was looking, it was 1997, and I was looking for a manual transmission, so I was looking all around.
Yeah, they're a little hard to find.
Sure. Even then, yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah. Were you looking for a Land Rover specifically, or is this like, you're just looking for a manual, you wanted something different, and that popped up, or was it knew that you wanted a Land Rover?
Definitely wanted a Land Rover. I had moved to Spain when I was a child with my mother, and I had seen Land Rovers there when I was 8, and I knew that was the ultimate vehicle for an adventurer, and I definitely wanted one. Of course, then we're talking about series Land Rovers, and that's really what I fell in love with first. And when I
those would have been Santanas over there, right?
You know, I think they were. Unfortunately, it was before my photo days, so I didn't really photograph any, but I believe they were mostly Santanas. Yeah, with the little they had the safari roofs, I remember.
Yep, right.
Yeah,
those are ticket, those safari roofs. Yeah. So you did go out then looking for Defender, and you found one in secondhand. Mm-hmm. And was there a journey to get it? Was there an adventure getting the vehicle itself? There usually is. That's why I ask.
Right. It was a bit of an adventure. There was a guy representing the shop in New York, and he drove it up to southern Massachusetts, and we met at a toll booth.
All righty.
That's how it worked.
That's an interesting place to meet.
Well, at least it didn't get the name the toll booth, I guess. That's right. Yeah. And you were buying it right then and there, or was it like, I'll just bring the vehicle to show you, or had you already bought it?
I had kind of put a down payment on it, and then I purchased it.
Did you pay the man with quarters?
Yes.
He's a CC
pass.
Well,
you needed to get back through. Yes.
So it was completely drivable?
Yes, it was. And it was in great condition. It had 18,000 miles on it. I think it was somebody's second vehicle. It was beautiful.
A low-mileage North American spec.
When did you get that? Yeah. How long ago was that?
This would have been 1997, so 17 years ago.
Wow.
So you bought it when it was only 2 years old?
Yes.
Wow.
That's nice. And it's only gone up in value since then.
It did go up in value for a while. I think at this point, I'm not sure. I think now it's, about 13 or 15,000 that they go for? I'm not really sure. Mine has definitely been used.
No, sir. You
look again, buddy. They go for more than that now.
You can get there's only, what's the number again? 500?
500 per year over 4 year span. So there's only 2,000 North American spec 90s.
And then there were 50 110s, right?
500 110s.
500 110s also. So there's a very limited number of North American spec versions here in the United States, and their value's only gone up. Recently, I've seen them go for $40,000,
$50,000,
$60,000. Wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, yours?
The 90s don't bring as much, mind you, because they had four times as many of them, but still, it's going to go for more than 15. You can get rusty, nasty ones for 15, and given that yours has been in Mexico, I don't think it's rusty.
No, that's true. It's not. It did have some rust that I had to take out from the Massachusetts days and the salt on the roads, but down here it's so dry. But I'm never going to sell. It's really...
Oh, no. We weren't saying that you should. We were just thinking about the price and the value. And
Although if you do sell it, we have dibs.
Yes. You got it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yes, we would. Yes, the podcast has dibs on any Defender that should be sold.
We hereby claim every Defender on the continent.
Yeah, we will decide.
We're gonna have to make up our own flag.
That's a great idea.
I believe so.
And I haven't even been drinking today.
Welcome to Defender Land.
Sorry, Sean, we got a little off track there. All right, so you have a 97.
95.
Sorry, you got it in 97. So you have a 95 D90, and you've had it for a number of years. That's good. Have you done anything to it besides general maintenance? I'm thinking, like, have you done anything for adventuring, off-roading, overlanding?
We keep it pretty stock. She does have slightly larger mud terrains, but nothing that big. I think they're 33s.
No,
everything's stock. We have a Badger Coachworks top that is awesome.
I was going to ask if it was hard or soft top, so you have soft top.
That's true. Yes, I have a soft top. But no, otherwise she's pretty stock. Maintenance, of course, is a bit of a challenge down here. We get most of our parts through the United States or directly from England, but we don't work so much with Land Rover Mexico. Hmm. They do have Defenders, but not everything applies to our Defender.
Well, the nice thing about the 95 is that it looks a little more like something they would understand down there, having a distributor and spark plug wires and all that sort of thing.
Right.
Well, that's true. It sounds like his experience is not much different than ours, because, you know, you take a Defender into a United States dealership and they look at you weird. So it's nothing.
Well, there would be that.
I wouldn't take one to a dealership unless I was, you know, had a gun to my head.
Well, I wouldn't either, but then again, I don't have to.
No, you don't. No, you don't. And oddly enough, though, we do get our parts from the United States and from England also. So it's your experience is the same as ours, pretty much.
Actually, the interesting thing is a lot of the V8 stuff is hard to get out of England. It's easier to get locally here than it is to get out of England, because that's considered a special option over there. They didn't sell many gasoline V8s over there, so the parts are not commonly stocked.
Right. So you have a basically stock disco. You have basically stock Defender, which is nice. That's all good. Radio, CB, anything interesting?
You know, I think I had some high school kids in Massachusetts relieve me of the radio, and since it's a soft top in Mexico, I don't keep anything in it. In fact, we do the exact opposite. We don't have a cubby box. We don't have speakers. We don't have a stereo. We don't have a back seat. We don't have a tire rack. We keep everything really minimal because we have to be able to leave it as it is when we are hiking or doing other things like that.
So you keep it stripped down on purpose.
Right.
So it's there when they return.
And even so, of course, we take good care of it. We're installing a kill switch, and we do like to tuck it away and leave it unexposed whenever possible.
Yeah.
But often we have to leave it open.
Hidden kill switch is an easy, cheap upgrade to do. Of course, in this country, we don't need those because you have a manual transmission. That's the ultimate theft resistance here.
Right. Now, here, anybody can drive it. My only saving grace is that she's a little finicky.
Yeah. Car thieves here, for some reason, do not know how to drive manual transmission. And if you really want to go for the ultimate in theft proofing, get yourself a right-hand drive manual transmission.
Yeah, it throws people off.
Professionally, particularly a series truck. So you have four sticks coming up out of the floor.
That's right.
It really messes with their minds.
Yeah, and you just put the transfer case in neutral and you're good.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. That's another good thing to do. Yeah, yeah. So why is it finicky?
Recently, we're just resolving a problem with the front prop shaft. We got it from GBR Performance in Salt Lake City.
Yep.
We lost the U-joint. And it damaged the front prop. It damaged the sleeve yoke, and so we had to replace the front prop shaft. But we're also having, I think, some issues, or at least we were, with the fuel injection. It's possible that that's mostly resolved. We just recently cleaned the fuel lines, and were able to get it run a little smoother. But we had some issues there, and we had the prop shaft, things like that. But she's running pretty well, considering we don't have. Well, it's a little harder to maintain the Land Rover down here sometimes, getting parts.
Do you do it yourself, or do you work on your own vehicle, or do you have to find a local garage?
I do a little bit of both. It depends on what we're talking about, but I do all the research, and if need be, I'll rely on a mechanic around here.
Right.
There are a lot of good resources online for the research to know what to do.
Right. Well, when I had this front prop shaft issue, the U-joint situation, we were in the middle of nowhere, and we had hoped to remove the front prop shaft and just continue on with the rear prop shaft, but that doesn't work, and we had to figure out why, and I think it was on D90 Source that they were explaining that just wouldn't work.
You have to lock the center diff, and then you should be fine.
Right, but we were trying to cover a couple hundred miles on the highway, so we didn't do that.
It should still work with the diff locked.
Yeah. It worked, but we weren't sure about driving on the highway with it.
It should be okay.
Cool.
So do you have to go to GBR for a replacement shaft, or did you just go with something different?
I went with GBR to replace the front prop shaft.
Okay.
Turned out to be really relatively inexpensive, $200, which, considering what I was seeing online for the front prop shaft of the NAS Defender, I'm pretty happy about that.
They're good people there.
The piece looks fantastic. Yeah, the piece looks fantastic. I'm pretty excited about it. We haven't put it in yet, but we're going to do that this week.
Yeah, that outfit is run by a guy named Bill Davis. He's originally from Pittsburgh.
I did not know that.
Cool.
He's one of ours.
Yeah, I spoke with Bill. He was very helpful.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Cool.
So you do your own maintenance. And so what do you do with the Defender? You're a photographer. Can you give us a little more about, do you use it for work, it sounds like, and also, and I guess for leisure and fun and adventure?
for everything. Sure. I came down to Mexico 7 years ago. So did my partner, Mitty. She's a writer. I'm a freelance photographer. Mostly documentary photography is my thing, but we also do a lot of travel, and I do a lot of commercial work too, basically to fuel the travel. We're interested in traveling all over Mexico and further south, and we write articles, we take photos, and we try to just keep the adventure going with what we can make from that, if that makes sense.
It seems to me if she's a writer and you're a photographer, you've kind of got the whole package right there.
Yes.
Right. It's working out pretty well. You know, we've produced a few articles for Jeff with Rovers Magazine, and we have one coming out with Land Rover Monthly. And it's working well. We're hoping that we can use publications in part to get us a little further south. It's all about fundraising at this point and getting the Rover ready to sleep in it. yes.
So, yeah, go ahead.
We're going to put some grills on the outside for protection, A, for when we sleep, but also for the things that we might like to leave behind, like some camping gear. On a longer trip, which I think would probably be about 3 or 4 months, we'll have a little bit more gear, so we'll have to find ways to secure it. Currently working on that stuff.
Sure, sure. So you said you're going south, and I know we talked a little bit before the podcast, and I think you're headed to South America. And you tell us some more about that and what you're going to do and how that's taking shape?
Yeah, we're interested in running pretty much the Pan American Highway, and we're going to get off it a whole bunch on the way down. But we want to travel down to probably Costa Rica, where we'll catch the ferry to cross the Darien Gap. We will not be crossing the Darien Gap with the vehicle. I think it's passable. I don't think it's safe. I think they have a lot of security issues there. So we're going to go around that part, and it'll probably dump us either in Colombia or Ecuador. And from there, we want to meet with Land Rover groups. We want to get into the nooks and crannies, see the indigenous peoples, and just really experience Latin America. You know, we live in a place with such cultural richness that it's kind of a shame not to.
Have you had a chat with Graham and Louisa yet?
Graham, are you talking about in Belize?
No, Graham and Louisa Bell, they're the family that's doing the A2A expedition.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I don't know them personally, but I have spoken to them, and they passed through. Unfortunately, we missed them. I think they're already in Alaska, aren't they?
I believe they're in Washington getting ready to cross over into Canada. They're heading to Alaska, yes.
I would highly recommend. They've been on the podcast, and I'd highly recommend their book. Talks about some of the things that you have referenced about crossing the Darien Gap and getting all around Brazil.
They'd be a good resource,
and also
good resource. In fact, they've already been very helpful. I think we're going to connect with some Land Rover clubs further south through them, so that'll be helpful too. Of course, one of the things we'll be doing is finding places to camp for free. Maybe the occasional shower, so those contacts help.
Yeah, as I understand it, they're masters at that particular skill.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, they stayed at a lot of truck stops and gas stations, and they've
wrangled into a few house-sitting jobs along the way, too.
They did. They had some people take them in, and they've had some house-sitting jobs, and they did pretty well. They've done pretty well. Yeah, but buy their book, so that helps them out too. So
absolutely,
and then make your own book. Apparently, that's the format.
That would nothing wrong with that. Yeah, good book. That'd be good. You got a writer and a photographer. Done deal.
Go.
That's it. Put out a Kindle edition, $4 a pop, maybe a little more. You'd be all right.
Absolutely, I think as freelancers, it's key for us to have various sources of income. So having a book online like that would certainly help our cause.
Oh, absolutely, and there was a travel funding site that just closed down. Travolta, is that the name of it? But it was kind of a similar, like a GoFundMe, or in fact, you could even use GoFundMe too. That's another thing to consider. There's a way to do that. And there's another site which may be more your speed, and you could utilize it better, called Patreon. And in fact, I'm considering that for our podcast as a way to help fund a little bit of what we do. And you can. And it's basically, it goes along the word with Patreon. It's like you can become a patron. So if you, like in a podcast world, you put out a monthly episode, you could have folks contribute, subscribe, and give, $1, $5, $10 an episode. And then you could do something along the same lines, potentially, Sean, with the way you're maybe putting out an article and with pictures and all sorts of kind of interesting things you could do there. Something to look at.
Excellent. Thank you. Patreon.
Patreon. P-A-T-R-E-O-N, right? Patreon.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, Patreon. Yeah. So I've been looking at it on and off for the past couple months. It's want to make it work, and I have some ideas and to make it work. Plus, I'm just busy during the summer, but I think maybe in the next month or two, I might put ours up. And Ben from Fun Rover just put one up for his his video efforts. So that's out there. And anyway, something to look at. That's cool. So you want to go south into South America, and you think this is going to be a 3 or 4 month journey?
Probably so. Yeah, we're not entirely sure, but it'll depend on fundraising and how much time we can afford to feed ourselves and put gasoline in the Land Rover. Yeah, we'll probably rent our little place out here, so we'll have that money coming in, but we'll also have to raise a whole bunch before we leave.
Well, you folks you do work now. Can you take any of that with you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we'll be working hard up until we leave, and on the road, we'll also be trying to get as many jobs as we can. So yeah, we'll be doing a little bit of everything.
I think your skills are portable. I would think you could sort of work your way down the continent.
Sure. I think so too. Writing ahead and sending my portfolio, that will work to some degree. I think it'll be, yes, one source of income as we do it, hopefully.
It's not always necessarily about having one really good source if you have a bunch of little things that trickle in fast enough.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a question, then it went out of my head. That's what happens.
Whoops.
Yeah, it does. That does happen. All right, so you're headed for 3 or 4 months into South America. How much do you expect to cover? Like, are you thinking, from reading Graham's book, it seems like that's not a lot of time.
Well, they were in no particular hurry, mind you.
No, but it still seems like, 3 or 4 months, maybe you might be able to do Brazil.
Again, it depends on how thoroughly you want to do it.
I suppose.
Right. We certainly want to do it thoroughly, and we'll probably be resting up to have, say, money from the house, which will be coming in as rent, reach us. So we'll be taking our time. 3 or 4 months may be too short of a time, but we're hoping to be around there, maybe 4 to 6 then. But someplace around then, we are going to get off the beaten path as much as possible, so it could take quite a while.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, interesting. So, and what kind of output? That's because I can't think of anything better right now. Just expect, like, do you plan to have articles come out? You're having a blog or a Facebook site or something?
Well, we'll use a Facebook site, but we just started a URL, which is seanandmitty.com, and we'll be putting our rover landing stuff there. We are going to produce some articles on the road. That'll be new. Up until now, we've taken trips, we've returned, we've sent the articles in for publishing and payment. But I think since we are going to be hoping for another source of income on the road, we'll be pausing to submit. I'll be editing on the road. We'll both be editing on the road, and we'll probably submit on the way if we can. We'll have to get an agreement with some of the publications to make sure that they will want this material.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Good idea. But, that's maybe where the Patreon could help you out too.
Getting them to want it, I don't think, is the problem. Getting them to want to pay for it is maybe another story.
No, true. True.
Well, we have had some success in that department. We are selling some of these Land Rover articles. Of course, not always, but that's part of the plan.
Good for you.
Well, you have experience, you have some history to it, and you have a nice story because the vehicle has a cool name and it came up in a cool way. So you've got some charisma around it, right?
Yes, I hope so. we're pretty excited.
Yeah, you should be. It sounds fascinating. Just through the podcast and meeting some people, we have. I know overlanding's become more interesting to me than it ever had been, and think than I thought in my life. And so hearing, Graham and Louisa coming from South Africa and going through South America and coming up into here, it's interesting. And then, there's
what impresses me about them is that they just have no real plan for when this is going to end. They're just living the dream. They're just doing it.
True, true. And
for however long they want to, which is really cool.
And yeah, with two younger children, right?
Yes.
Not so young anymore, actually.
Not so young.
Yeah, I think his boy is 16 or 15, 16.
He just turned 16.
And then his youngest daughter is 9, maybe 10.
Something like that. Yeah, so the boy is learning to drive while on this venture.
While on the drive, yeah. Then there's
an amazing experience.
Oh, wouldn't it be? That'd just be tremendous. Yeah, absolutely tremendous just to grow up in that kind of world, if you will. Mm-hmm. There's a Lizzie bus. I don't know if you've heard of them. That's a
absolutely.
So you know, they've gone around the world once. Now they're going to go into Siberia and
six continents, 66 countries, 133,000 miles.
Yes, they're an inspiration. They're amazing, and they just got the Lizzie bus fixed up, right, to go into Russia.
They just redid the truck, and they're going to go do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then the. Is it the day trippers that are now? They were in Kazakhstan. They're from Brazil. They're in a 110. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, that's new. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. I will send you guys the link.
Yeah.
Pretty sure they're the day trippers, and they just went through Kazakhstan in a navy blue 110. They came through here like maybe 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's neat stuff.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I'm fishing for a Borat reference, but I'm not coming up with it.
I'm not a Borat guy. Sorry.
Well, you know, Kazakhstan Borat. It's okay. Enough said.
Okay. Yeah. Insert your own joke here.
Right. Yeah. There you go. We'll leave a blank spot.
So you've always been a Land Rover guy, Sean?
Yeah, pretty much since about 8.
And that was from watching all the old safari videos and movies and videos. There's a new word. I use from have you owned any other Land Rovers?
No, in fact, I've never owned another vehicle.
Whoa!
Only had this one. Yeah, I think as a child, I always wanted to be an adventurer. That was, a discoverer, an adventurer, and so the Land Rover was the obvious choice. And when I got to the States, I was looking for the series, but the Defender had finally come out over there, so it was a possibility.
So this is the only vehicle you have ever owned?
That's correct. Yeah, I used to do my daily commute in it.
Damn.
When I had a daily commute.
Harold is actually jealous, I think.
No, I'm just stunned. The concept of only owning one vehicle is kind of foreign to me.
I have no frame of reference.
To different worlds. Definitely different worlds. I think Harold owned owned his first vehicle when he was what, 15?
No, I was 16.
16,
but,
yeah.
But I mean, I only owned one vehicle for a very short period of time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like potato chips; you can't have just one.
It's true. So, just from the Poderosa video and your website, you were not always a photographer. And can we ask what you used to do and how that got you to where you are now?
Right. Well, I had gone to school for foreign policy, and I had worked in Boston and Washington, D.C. in the area of U.S. Latin American relations. I was working... Well, Harvard has a Center for Latin American Studies. I was with the Inter-American Development Bank. And the last thing I was doing was working with organizations interested in immigration policy. But it was right around there that I needed a break. I needed to get out. I was feeling that I wasn't in the action. I was always interested in Latin America. I'd been traveling and taking photographs since I was a child. But I was spending most of my time behind a desk doing research on the East Coast, which was cool, but it wasn't as fulfilling. So coming down here, I really was going to relocate to the United States. I was thinking Texas or California by the border. But leaving the United States, I realized that I wasn't really interested in going back, but rather I wanted to keep the adventure going. So how do you do that? So you've been a photographer, an amateur, for 15, 20 years. Then you take that and you try to make a living out of it, and that's kind of where I've been for, say, the last 5 or 6 years. But it's panned out. Now the freelance photographer business is established, so I have enough clients to keep going.
And the nice thing is you have that background in the Latin American and the international relations that allows you to have the life down there.
Right. And I speak Spanish. That helps. Yeah, we're very interested in the Central American migrants that come through here, and we write about that, and we photograph them. So, yeah, you're right. My background is relevant to what I'm doing down here. I would say my parents don't agree with that, but.
Uh-oh.
Parents don't often agree or don't always agree with the choices we make in life, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Do they come visit you?
No, but actually my mother doesn't live too far away. She lives in Mexico. But she just believes that I should get back on the path.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I can understand
like
that.
Get a real job.
Yes, son, get a real job.
Yes,
yes, and there's probably that. There's probably the other thing too. Hey, where's the grandkids? That usually follows up. You know, one follows the other. Yeah, get a real job. We need grandkids. You know, well, they need someone to spoil. Little do they know, his defender is his grandchild.
There you go.
Can't they just spoil my Land Rover?
Yes, exactly. So I've been trying to convince people my own self.
Yeah, who needs kids?
Well, we certainly can't afford kids right now.
Yeah.
Well. Especially not, it's going to be a fair amount of effort just to get the Rover up to speed for the longer trip, because we do have a fair amount of maintenance before then.
Right. Well, so what things do you want to do to the truck? I know you want to get it ready for sleeping and for a little more safety. So are you going to put a hard top on it? Have you thought about maybe using a 110 instead? But then again, of course, that would defeat the purpose of you only ever owning one vehicle your entire life.
Right. No. This is about doing it with almost no money, John. I have to. I don't know if you've seen it, but I have a grill on the front of my Defender that is made by a metal worker with materials from a hardware store. I'm going to use that stuff to basically cage in the back of the Rover. And as far as sleeping goes, it's going to be a wood platform on some metal braces that'll essentially cover the entire back. I think the passenger seat will have to fold down as much as it does, and we'll have our feet go that way. It's not going to be ideal, but when we're not doing that, we'll be camping and staying wherever else we can. Mm-hmm. But no, we have to do it with what we have. You know, we're freelance writer and photographer. We don't have many resources to put toward this. If we can save the gas money and the money to feed ourselves, I think we'll be in good shape.
So you're going to construct something akin to a shark cage on wheels.
That's right.
Okay. that's an interesting approach.
Yeah. Well, it fits. It fits. You know,
And if it suits your needs, then go for it.
Yeah, we do have to keep things simple. If we're going to be traveling as much as we'd like to, we really have to keep costs down.
Right.
Have you ever thought about maybe a platform on the roof for sleeping?
Yes, I have thought about that.
You'd have more length, more room, I think.
That is true. Then we'd have to cover it. But yes, right.
Some boards or something would be okay.
Thanks, Harold. I'm going to give that some thought, actually. That's not a bad idea.
You could throw a roof rack up there. You wouldn't even need to put anything above on the top.
I'm thinking if he's building his cage, if he uses a little bit heavier metal and makes it strong enough, he could just lay some boards up top, some planking, sleep on that.
Oh.
And that's a low-money solution.
That is a low-money solution also, yeah.
You'd have the extra length being able to go all the way to the windscreen.
Right, right. Oh, I was thinking you were thinking of going the fuller way of putting a tent up there and, you know, having the,
Well, that's great if you have the money.
Expedition tent, right, yeah.
Tents are cool, but
sure.
I think down there you could sleep under the stars and it would be a lot of fun being up off the ground.
I don't think you have lions to worry about.
No, but if we had the right sponsor for a rooftop tent, that would be awesome. We will probably have some inclement weather. We have to plan the trip so that we don't, say, hit Central America in the rainy season or the tip of Argentina in winter. So we'll have to see how that plays out, but we'll definitely get some rain.
Yeah, and you're gonna keep the vehicle open.
Well, he has a soft top.
Yeah,
I do. I have a Badger Coachworks. It's actually a Coachworks. Excuse me. It's a full top, but it no longer has the sides. It's 10 years old, so it's a Surrey top at this point. Yeah.
So that could be interesting when the rain starts coming in sideways.
Right. Well, yeah. We're thinking about all kinds of creative solutions. We might even put our own sides on it this time. We'll see.
Find some local that's handy with a sewing machine?
Perhaps. Or maybe Chris at Badger Coachworks will consider helping us out a little bit.
That's right.
Sponsorship's always a good thing.
Right. And we'll be doing that too.
Yeah. If you put sides on it, you're going to need a rear cover because at least with my 109, I know the way the wind rolls. Once I put sides down, all the stuff gets kicked up in the back and rolls up and then comes back into the cabin from the rear.
Yep. So true.
Yeah. So I have to just something to think about.
Yeah, it's not just two sides. You have to get around the back too.
You do. Yeah, you do have three. Yeah. Yeah. Just something to think about. Sorry, I'm thinking about all those things as we're talking. And
yeah, this is good. This is very helpful, actually. The rooftop idea is something to be considered.
Yeah. Actually, not a bad idea. You could even throw a tent up there if you had to.
That's true.
Just make sure, as long as you're not a sleeper who rolls around a lot. So, then roll off the side.
Yeah, that would suck.
All right, so minimal modifications. You're going to head 3-4 months or so until the money runs out, it sounds like, and head to South. Well, that's kind of like life, really. Just you'll do whatever you need to do until the money runs out. And any other ideas like beyond that? Is anything special you want to do? I know you want to go off the beaten path in South America. Is there anything special you want to see? Anything where you want to go? Something that you have to check out on your list of things?
There are several archaeological sites in southern Mexico and Central America that we'll want to check out. When we get over into South America, we have the salt flats of Bolivia. We have the Atacama Desert. We definitely want to see the Amazon. We'll probably do so a little bit more from the west rather than head over to the east into Brazil. And I think every step of the way is going to be pretty gorgeous.
And what about other cultural amenities like food and drink?
We'll be exploring all of the cuisines. We'll be eating some pretty risky stuff, no doubt. But we do that here anyway in Mexico. We eat everything. We eat the street food. We eat everything that everybody else here eats just to get a sense of it. And it's usually pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I'm as you may notice, because I know you can see me on Skype, I enjoy food myself.
We do occasionally run into trouble with our stomachs. You know, we were in Cuba for a month, for example, and we both had typhoid, which was a very difficult thing to get through. But it was, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens to us on these journeys.
Now, you mentioned going to some archaeological sites. By chance, would one of those be the Ruta Maya?
The Ruta Maya? You mean the one... The Land Rover Camel Trophy?
Yeah, there's a Ruta Maya site there that they actually made replicas of some of the statues and hauled them in by Discovery.
That's very cool. We passed by part of that route when we were in Guatemala last time, which is why I think Jeff called the Guatemala article Ruta Maya 14. But we probably will. I'm going to have to do some research.
Yeah, somewhere in my archives of stuff, I have a video that was produced of that journey, and it was pretty interesting.
That was one of the Camel Trophy?
It wasn't Camel Trophy. Oh. It was just a bunch of archaeologists who I think they were maybe not sponsored by Land Rover, but it was a fleet of discoveries, and they made these replicas of the statues, and they strapped them to the roof rack, and then drove them through the jungle to the site.
Oh, neat!
That's cool. But you know, I'm sorry, I was confused. It was Mundo Maya, which I think was the camel expedition
that could be
that came through, and that was also the name of the article. But you're saying Ruta Maya,
yeah.
And I don't know. I'm going to check that out.
You should check that out because that's right up your alley.
Yeah,
absolutely. Neat. Very cool. Thank you.
What other interesting Land Rover things have occurred in South America that there was a Camel Trophy or two? I'm not up on my
besides the Camel Trophy and the infamous Darien Gap crossing.
Right.
I'm not sure what else.
Yeah.
Not much since then. Didn't they have the G4?
I think they tried to hit all the continents, but I
think there was some G4 activity there, but I really haven't followed that as closely as the Camel.
And the G4 mainly was less about off-roading than it was about the kind of adventuring and getting there in the truck.
It seemed to me that it kind of paled in comparison to the legendary Camel Trophy.
Definitely. Yeah, that was more about the lifestyle, I think. That's probably a better way to put that.
Yeah.
Lifestyle adventuring. Yeah. Well, although, that's kind of what Sean and his partner's doing. I forgot her name. I'm sorry.
Mitty Roget.
Mitty, thank you.
Mitty,
yep.
M-I-T-T?
T-T-I-E.
M-I-T-T, Mitty. Hello, Mitty.
I'm afraid she's not here right now.
That's okay.
is that name from Cajun influence?
Her last name, yes. And Mitty is a family name.
Okay, interesting.
And you're both from, are you both from Louisiana?
We're both from Louisiana, and we met down here.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
You met down there.
We're pretty happy.
You met in Mexico.
Yes, we did.
Even though you're both from, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Small world, eh?
Very fortunate finding each other here.
That's very cool. That's very cool. We had talked earlier, so you're from Louisiana originally, and then you moved around a little bit. You were in Spain, you were in Massachusetts and D.C.
That's right. Exactly. Pretty much in that order. And I was finishing up in Washington, D.C. when I came down here to San Miguel.
And did you have any problems crossing the border with your defender?
No. Trouble. Oh, I do have to keep it constantly updated. I still have American plates. I don't know if you guys know that South Dakota allows you to have plates even if you're a non-resident. So I have plates from there on my defender down here, which means I have to bring it out of the country every so often. Right now I have a residency, so it's good probably for 4 years as long as I keep renewing it, but eventually I have to bring it in and out to renew the importation sticker on it.
Hmm. So when that time
just
comes,
to keep it update.
When that time comes, you just have to take a road trip up to the States and maybe come see us, and then that clears the slate for you.
That's right. It takes about 10 hours to reach the border from here, and sometimes the last time we did it or the time before that, we did it through the Chiapas-Guatemala border. And then came in through Belize, Mexico. And it's pretty fine. You know, American plates, American passports, not too much trouble at the borders.
That's good. That's good to hear.
And the truck is North American spec and has the sticker to prove it, so there's no question with that side of things, since that's a big issue now with defenders. That's
especially coming into the U.S., yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's much easier to take them out than it is to bring them in.
Mm-hmm. And we keep our inspection sticker up to date and everything like that. So, but it's cool. We just have to be informed. It's like being an expat. There are so many rules that apply to your residency, your taxes, everything else that you have to learn how to manage. It's a consideration, but it's not too big of a problem.
Do you have any problems importing the vehicle into Mexico? Do they have the same issues that the U.S. has, or same restrictions, excuse me, that the U.S. has with the safety and emissions?
No, not for temporary importation. Since I'm not nationalizing the vehicle, I don't really have to worry about emission standards, although I do keep my sticker current just to stay out of trouble. But since the big thing would be nationalizing, and since I'm essentially bringing it in on a sticker that lasts 6 months unless do you have a residency card, in which case it lasts the length of the residency, which in this case will probably be about 4 years. I'm okay. As long as I have that sticker, and I'm in pretty much good shape, I don't have to worry.
So that sounds a lot like the temporary short-term exemptions that non-citizens get for bringing things in here to the U.S. You're a non-Mexican citizen, so they give you temporary permission to bring whatever you have, pretty much.
Exactly. As long as my papers are up to date, the vehicle is protected.
As long as it's legal in the country it's coming from.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct. Yeah. I did once have an issue in which the vehicle could not be taken out as its papers were expiring, and I had to get a special document that was called a safe return that allowed me to just make a drive for the border.
Interesting.
That's too funny. Yes.
Permission to flee.
Yes, granted. Yes, go. Yes. Do you have any problems at the border in the United States getting back in? They look at you weird, funny. I'm just curious to see what that border crossing is like.
Yeah, we've actually had nothing major, but we've had some difficulties at the U.S. border, more so than at other borders, but just because they're very thorough. they do question. We come in using different vehicles different times. The last time we went up, we were actually driving a Mini Cooper to San Antonio to be sold because, well, some friends were in the same boat we are in which they had a non-NAFTA vehicle that cannot be nationalized. That's essentially why my Land Rover cannot be nationalized. In Mexico, it's already been imported to the United States once, so they don't do that. That car had to leave, and when it left, when we were at the border, they noted that we were not in our usual car, and they wanted to know about the Defender. But usually the Defender is not a problem because it has both of our logos on it, and it seems all pretty much above board, and they can check it out in a matter of minutes, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but they do. They check things out. We also have been stopped in the southern border. That whole stretch of Mexico that runs along the Guatemalan border is a little intense security-wise. There are a lot of drugs that move through there, so they patrol a lot of military checkpoints. And there we've been out of the vehicle. They've taken parts off of it, and we've had dogs. But no problems, really. I mean, as long as our papers are in order, which they usually are, we're in good shape.
Well, that's good to hear. I've crossed the Canadian border, but I've not had to cross the Mexican border.
Yeah, it's an experience, and so is Central America. Those borders are pretty chaotic.
Is that a nice word for disorganized and concerning?
Yeah. Well, because they have a different setup. You know, in the no man's zone, the no man's land between the borders, there are often people that want to help you with your papers, and there might be a bunch of them, and they might be pounding on the glass, that kind of thing. So it's different. It's a whole different experience.
Wow. Yeah, that's... That would be different.
Intense is a good word.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. So beyond visiting South America, is there other plans down the road years from now? Do you have, go to other continents or maybe a deep dive into a specific culture in South America?
Well, I think ultimately we'll want to live elsewhere further south. But I think after the trip to Argentina, if it goes well, we want to just essentially keep going. We want to go up to Alaska and continue the adventure. If at all possible, and I haven't looked into this yet, but if there's a ferry across from Alaska to Russia, we would love to continue the dream. Absolutely. I mean, it'll depend on funding.
I believe there's one proposed, but I don't think there ever was one up in the place.
As of yet.
Yeah.
I heard there was even talk of a bridge. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, there was a couple. I think within the past year or two, there was, I think, a Russian who was talking about a bridge. But I can't imagine that that's...
Not a great distance.
No, it's what, 180 miles, I think? Is that the closest?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you can island hop, it's actually a lot shorter.
Is it? Okay. So you would have to do a series of bridges, probably.
Yeah.
Might be further away politically, though, huh?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Not maybe as far as it once was, but still... Probably too far to make a bridge happen.
There's some conversation that the Cold War has restarted again.
That's yeah.
Especially within the past 2 years or so.
Yeah, and, I could see that to a certain extent.
Yeah, that I think actually the other you may not have noticed, but the atomic clock that they had has ticked closer.
The doomsday clock.
Doomsday clock. Thank you. Has ticked closer instead of further away from midnight.
Haven't checked it recently.
Exactly. Yes, but things have changed. Yeah. So, but why is everybody going to Alaska? This is my question.
Because it's cool.
Literally cool?
One of the last great wildernesses, right?
Well, in winter it is.
I suppose it's the last great wilderness. Well, I guess Siberia, and it's tough to go to Siberia now.
It is sort of the final frontier, if you will, in this country at least.
Yeah, well, there's the Amazon. You got Africa.
In this country.
Okay, all right. That's true. Well, there's a lot of Canada. A lot of Canada is not even roaded, you know.
You have to cross that to get to Alaska. Mm-hmm. So you see that as a bonus.
That's true. You get to into British Columbia, leaping from tree to tree.
Or the Yukon, maybe, depending on which way you go.
Yeah. I'm just curious what I looked when Dan was going to Alaska, and he's just thinking about that.
Well, he goes because his job is there, and we've had a presence there for a long time, perhaps because of our proximity to Russia.
Oh, definitely. But at the same time, though, I had like three or four friends, people I knew in Pittsburgh, all of a sudden, like, we're going to Alaska, and like independent, they know each other, and they're like, why is everybody going to Alaska? Just that's why I asked the question. It seems like everybody's going to Alaska.
Seems like there's been a major flux in the past few years of mm-hmm. cable TV shows that show things in Alaska.
That could be it. Well, it could be the wilderness and could be the adventuring. So, you know, which Sean is out doing. John's taking some of the adventuring for us, those of us who can't. Yeah. So what is your favorite part of the adventuring, Sean? Is it the, I realize you're a photographer, so that's probably your favorite part, but let's go with the next favorite part.
Well, actually, I think my favorite part is the freedom. The reason I'm down here doing this is because I love to have control of my life and to explore. My days are my own, and I spend them, as you say, doing things I love, which is photography, traveling with MIDI, my Defender. It's really everything I would want to do.
I officially hate you now. This is a jealous hate. Just to be clear, you're doing what you want, how you want, when you want.
Well, it's tricky. I have to say, you know, you give up a lot to do this also. You know, I used to have a paycheck. I had health care. I had stability. You know, my mother had hope of grandchildren. Those kind of things have to be put on hold. And as a freelancer, you know, sometimes you make money and sometimes you don't. So there's a lot of instability in it, if that makes sense. Yeah, sure, I am. I do feel like I'm living my dream. I had to really make it happen, though. But going back to what you said earlier, anybody can do this, John. You can do this too.
I've been thinking about it more and more now that we've been talking to all of you.
You make an interesting point, though. As an American in Mexico, what do you do for healthcare?
Well, with my residency papers, I am permitted to sign up for popular healthcare. Now, obviously, that's not the end-all be-all. It might not be the solution to everything, but it is a good protection to some degree. I also...
Is that Mexico's national healthcare?
That is correct. Okay. Yeah. And we have good doctors down here. And the other thing about our doctors is they're not terribly expensive. We don't have... I mean, if I can go to the dentist and I can get my teeth cleaned for $40 and have it be a really excellent job, you know, somebody trained in the United States even. But the overhead is lower, the costs are lower.
Right.
We can do it. But sure, things like that, healthcare, we are working on that. And that has to do with just making sure that we're residents and that we're signed up. We actually had an incident last year in which we were crossing a border and we realized that our registration on the vehicle had expired. And that was an issue. It wasn't an issue getting out of Mexico. It was an issue getting into Guatemala. Mm. But it did ultimately work out. But those kind of things, absolutely, you have to really stay on top of.
Where will we be able to find all of this information that you're going to put out? I know you mentioned earlier you're going to have a website. Is that coming soon? Is that something we can share with our audience now or maybe down the road?
Sure. We have something up. We just threw it up last night, but it really is we're consolidating the Rover Adventure material from my website and from MIDI's website. And it'll be on seanandmitty.com. That's seanandmitty.com. And we'll be putting our stuff there, but also it'll be coming out hopefully in Land Rover magazines. You know, we have this desert adventure. We just went to a town, a former ghost town called Real de Catorce, and wrote about it for Land Rover Monthly. And we'll be doing a lot of Mexico stuff before we head further south. So yeah, we'll be putting it all in seanandmitty.com.
Sean, good. We'll get that up on the show notes also, so that people can go and see that. And
thank you. Yeah, please follow us.
Oh, absolutely. Check it. Guys, speaking of following, so what about the social medias? Are you on the Twitters, the Instagrams, the Facebooks?
Yeah, MIDI. I do Facebook, but MIDI does everything. I think she's on all the platforms, and we put out a lot of content, and she does it on the road. Through, I think, Instagram and things like that. She puts up kind of a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff as we go.
And all those connections will be available from your website?
That's right. And what I can do is I can just make sure that I send it to you, too.
Yes, yeah, please do that. Yeah,
we'll
please
put a link on the show notes.
I did wish you happy birthday, by the way, from the Sinister podcast. So
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and happy birthday. It was Sean's birthday last week. So he turned 25, right?
Close to 40.
Whoa.
Yeah, you're still a kid to us.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I feel like a kid.
Good for you.
Living the dream.
That is good. That is good. Yeah, you are. It sounds like a fun time, good experience, and and you're, you know, being a, having a photographer and a, and a, and a writer in the couple there that should help to communicate that information out to everybody and the dream you're living.
Yeah, thank you. It's coming together, and we're really excited. This last year, we've felt a lot of momentum.
Have you gotten inspiration from others? And it, like, I know, you know, Graham and Louisa, certainly lately you talked to them, but like before that, when you were thinking about moving and changing your life, did you get inspiration from others, or, you know, a book, or, you know, an article, a photograph?
I wasn't as aware of overlanding at the time, but yes, I did have a lot of people, a lot of influences in my life that encouraged me to travel and get abroad. And I think the inspiration was finally coming over here and just seeing if I could start a business and survive. And once that happened, I just felt so free. I'll just keep doing it, see where I can go. Yeah, it's been inspiring, but I definitely do tap into people just like that. And Lizzie Buss as well. Those people, there are other people in Russia, I think Sirocco. Anyway, amazing stuff. And people are reaching such remote corners right now. It's a good time to be doing this. It's exciting.
It certainly is. Yeah, you're one of the, you know, three or four that we've talked to now that are having a good time and doing the overlanding, which, of course, overlanding means something different to everybody. But I think that generally, I think we know what that means. And good for you. That's really exciting. I'm excited by it. And also now jealous, and I hate you.
Hey, man, come crash on my sofa.
Don't be surprised. I may do that.
I'll put the back seat in the Rover for you, John.
All right. Well,
be careful what you get yourself into.
Yeah, yeah. And I should say, by the way, if you come to the United States, now granted, we're not close to the border by any stretch, but you're welcome to the Pittsburgh area, and you'll have a place to crash also.
Thank you very much, guys.
It's a neat place to be. It's not Pittsburgh is a cool place these days.
As long as you can handle the language difference.
Yeah, but language difference. Yeah, there is that. And bad traffic, bad roads. Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
But, well, it's East Coast, right? I love Pittsburgh. I mean, that whole area is gorgeous up there.
Have you been?
Pittsburgh, yeah. I haven't been probably in 10 years, but yes, I have. I've been to Pittsburgh, Philadelphia.
Good.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there.
It has... go ahead.
I was going to say I probably was there in the Defender.
And we didn't see you. Usually we track them all. We see them.
Yes, we keep tabs on every last Defender in the area.
Well,
you know,
go ahead.
I was in Philadelphia, and I think there was an owner of the restaurant. There was a nice restaurant, and the owner had a beautiful bottle green series Land Rover, but I'm pretty sure it was Philadelphia, not Pittsburgh, which is gorgeous.
Well, we have a couple of those here too. Yes, we are like stalkers for all the old Land Rovers around here.
We are. Well, Harold and I are also in a local Land Rover club, but it's called the Fort Pitt Land Rover Group here in the Pittsburgh area. And so we have a forum, and on that we have a special sighting section. So when someone sees something they haven't seen before, who owns that? Where did that come from? Yeah. we like to keep track of these things. Yes.
And the funny thing is that quite often somebody in the club knows it.
That's true. We do know. And yeah, there's not that many, so we do all know where they are. And it's
right. And I do the same thing down here. I photograph just about everything I can.
We need to get you up here to photograph our trucks. That'd be cool.
I would love to. You have a 109X Military Defense?
Yeah, I have a Series 3 109 XMOD. It actually served at the British Territorial Army.
Oh, very cool. And Harold, do you have a Defender?
I do not, actually. I have a Series 3 109 Ambulance is my flagship, and a number of other things, too. The Defender that I think maybe where you're getting that from is I had a Defender in my custody at the British Car Day show last weekend, but that actually belongs to a customer of mine.
That was it. Okay. Cool. Wow, that Ambulance sounds amazing.
It's interesting.
It is interesting. He took it off road. It's been 4 or 5 years now, and probably a place we shouldn't have taken that specific vehicle. But it almost toppled, and we have a really good picture of a friend of ours who's also in charge of our local club, and he's sitting on the fender on the wing trying to balance it out while we get toe straps in place. It's just
That big box out back doesn't really help you when you're in the woods.
Sean, you're going to be traveling, and we're going to keep abreast of that through all your websites and your social medias. And I want to thank you for joining us on the podcast today and taking the time to talk with us. See, we had a little bit of technical problems, so hopefully the end result will sound okay. And really want to thank you for joining us. It was great to talk with you, and you are certainly welcome to come to visit with us and bring your truck, though. Your truck actually is probably more welcome than you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't
come without your truck. If you come without your truck, we're sending you back.
Cool. Yes. No, we'll be exploring Mexico for a little while longer until we head further south, and we'll be publishing everything we do on seanandmitty.com as well as through the magazine. So please do stay tuned.
And we can hear your dog drinking in the background.
Yes, Switters is thirsty.
What's the dog's name?
Switters.
Switters.
Yes.
Well, hi, Switters. What kind of dog?
He's a mix. He's a German Shepherd, Shar Pei, Pit Bull mix. He's about 8, and he's a beautiful guy.
Does he like the Rover?
He loves the Rover, actually.
That's always good to have a Rover
dog.
That's
a smart dog.
Yeah, he loves to travel. He loves to stick his head out. Yeah, he loves it.
Oh, excellent. I don't think I saw any pictures of the dog. I have to go through your photos better. Is there one?
You know, that's a good point. I might have to post something of Switters.
You got to do that. Let's do that. There we go. The podcast has achieved something. We're going to get a picture of the dog.
Picture of Switters.
Wonderful.
Coming right away.
At request of. Well, thanks again, Sean. Really appreciate you taking the time. It's you're a couple hours, I think, behind us in Mexico, and I'm sure you could have been doing something more interesting than talking to us in my basement. But thanks very much for joining us on the show today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you guys very much.
And that brings us to a close of the 28th edition of the Center Steer podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. And don't forget, we're part of the 4x4 radio network. Go out to the 4x4radio.com. Listen to the other shows on the network. And check out our website for the show notes on this particular episode, including all the things that Sean mentioned for his website and how to track him down. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. And otherwise, we will talk with you next month for another edition of the Center Steer podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you.
The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Nivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.nivio.com. Son, get a real job.